This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Eric Rauchway is a professor of history at the University of California, Davis, and he is the author of The Great Depression and the New Deal, a very short introduction. Eric, how are you, sir?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Been looking forward to it. So what? I'm just curious, what's your reaction as a historian of this period of American history, when the news is so full of references to this period? You must grimace every now and then as reporters sort of talk about this the Great Depression like they know all about it.
Well, first of all, you don't want to hear your area of expertise discussed in the news if you're a historian. Historians generally write about unhappy things, and once you hear historians on the news, you know that we're kind of in trouble. And you certainly don't want to hear the Great Depression referred to too often as an item of contemporary relevance. I mean, it's the greatest disaster certainly to befall modern United States economy and possibly the United States economy ever. And the less like it we are looking, the happier we'll be.
Eric, are the comparisons that have been made recently in the media between what we're facing now and what America faced then, are these legitimate comparisons to be made?
Yeah, some of them are quite legitimate. The crises that led up to the current moment and those that led up to the moment, the late 1920s, are somewhat similar. Both of them have to do with shifts in the way Americans borrowed and the relationship of Americans to their banks, which suddenly began to fail in the late 1920s. The current banking crisis is frequently said to be the worst since the Great Depression. I think this is probably more or less accurate. The failure of Washington Mutual, for example, was of a size commensurate with the several failures that happened together in the late 1930s. So those things are true. And of course, the challenge facing policymakers now as then was to prevent this financial crisis from becoming a crisis for all of us to suffer. Then, of course, they failed rather dramatically to do that. Still have our fingers crossed, I think.
Tell us, we're talking with Eric Rauchway. The book is The Great Depression and the New Deal. Eric, to what extent, you know, some critics have said, well, it was all the deregulation. The conservatives got to Washington, the anti-government conservatives, pro-corporate folks, and they basically got rid of all these regulatory safeguards that the Roosevelt administration had put into effect after the crash of Wall Street in 1929. Is that accurate? Is that legitimate?
It certainly seems like there's some basis for that. You know, historians always get nervous when you want to talk about the current moment, and even more when you want to talk about the future. But it currently looks like what has happened is that a variety of new financial vehicles that were created were not put under the same kinds of regulation that the older ones. And the SEC, for example, the Securities and Exchange Commission, had no real jurisdiction over many of these things like credit default swaps, which are not even publicly traded. And so there was no mechanism to prevent these things from getting out of control, and that seems to have contributed mightily to the current predicament.
Eric, we're talking with Eric Rauchway. The book is The Great Depression and the New Deal. Eric, I interviewed recently had on this program Amity Schlaes, who has a new book out called The Forgotten Man. And I'm sure you're familiar with the book and the thesis that she argues that the Roosevelt administration and government actually caused some of the severity of the Great Depression, and the government, by getting involved and trying to fix the market, actually made it worse. And that is her thesis, and it's not such a veiled warning to the Obama administration to sort of stay out of this mess that you'll make it worse if you try to fix it. Tell us your thoughts on her thesis.
I would certainly be sorry if anyone took that as a serious assessment of what happened in the Great Depression or of what should happen next. The cascading bank failures that occurred in the later 1920s and early 1930s were only stopped by aggressive government action, and all the best scholarship by even quite conservative economists like Milton Friedman will tell you that the only thing that could have been done was dramatic government intervention to stop those failures. To the extent that we are not having failures of that magnitude now, it's because the Federal Reserve Board has acted where it did not act in the late 1920s and early 30s. It's because we have the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is a New Deal creation of 1933, that has acted, as in the case of Washington Mutual, where there was no such agency to act in the late 1920s and early 1930s. To the extent that the economy was put on the road to recovery in the early Roosevelt administration, it's because the Roosevelt administration stabilized the banks, revalued the dollar, and attracted a great deal of foreign investment to the United States. So that's all government action that helped solve the problems of the late 1920s, early 1930s. And it would be a shame to draw from that story the lesson that the government should not act, and it would actually be unforgivable to draw that conclusion.
We're talking with Eric Rauchway as a professor of history at the University of California, Davis. His book is The Great Depression and the New Deal. So if that's what Roosevelt did right, what did Roosevelt do wrong? Because he was president for a long time, and I'm sure he made some serious mistakes.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to say that Roosevelt didn't make mistakes. And in fact, in my book, I have a whole chapter given over to some of the New Deal's errors. You have to understand, and here's where a comparison to the present moment is really not warranted. The crisis that Roosevelt inherited when he came into office was not merely a crisis of the banks, but also of the entire economy. You have to think about this now. One in four workers was unemployed. That's 25% roughly unemployment rate. That's just staggering compared to anything that any of us remembers, unless we remember. It does go back to 1932. Beyond that unemployment rate, you know, roughly half of the remaining people who were still in work were working half time, and so were not drawing a full salary, nor were the people who depended on them. All of the resources that were available to them, like private or mutual or community rainy day, widows and orphans funds, had been wiped out by the unemployment crisis, and there was no place left to go. There are a fair few documented cases of people actually dying of starvation during this period. There's no government unemployment insurance to speak of. There's no old age pensions. So, and you have the banks failing sort of at a horrendously alarming rate. This is where Roosevelt comes in. So the depth of the crisis is really unimaginable, I hope, to most people today. I hope it remains unimaginable to us. So what does Roosevelt do? He does all those things I mentioned in terms of saving the banks. He also does almost anything else anybody can think of. Some of these ideas are not very good ones, and they've been left over actually from previous crises and aren't really well tailored to the current crisis. So, for example, there's something called the National Recovery Administration, which is modeled on the War Industry Board, cooperation between business and government from World War One. And while it might have been fine for the duration of World War One or for the crisis of a war, it turned out to be a poor model for the Depression. There was the Agricultural Adjustment Administration, which used taxes to pay farmers to produce less, which has gone on to become a lasting farm policy and is popular in the farm sector, although not perhaps so much with anybody else. Both of those policies were largely unpopular, except with the people they directly benefited. The NRA was also a material failure, the National Recovery Administration, and was involved in mostly investigating itself by roughly a year in operation, so by the end of 1934. The Supreme Court finally declared it unconstitutional altogether in 1935. The Supreme Court also declared the Agricultural Adjustment Act unconstitutional in 1935, and a version of it was reenacted under a soil conservation policy in sort of the latter part of the New Deal.
So, Eric, let me ask you this. We're taught in grade school that the America really didn't get out of the Great Depression, that it was World War II that really lifted America out of the Great Depression. Is that true?
Yeah, well, there's a way in which that's true and a way in which it isn't. The other thing about the New Deal that's really important, that turns out to be quite important in lifting people's spirits and getting people actually back to work, is relief work, the federal government directly employing people. This is also a terrific idea if you're a Keynesian, if you understand that the role of government is to stimulate the economy in a downturn. Unfortunately, Roosevelt was always very nervous about doing that kind of thing. It's not until 1937, when it looks like the economy is recovering and he pulls back on relief spending and the economy goes down into a tailspin again, that he and his advisors kind of learn that lesson. So it's not really until 1938 that they start to actually try to implement Keynes's principles. Okay, so that's 1938. 1939 is when the war begins in Europe, and the United States begins to aid Britain and the Soviet Union later in their defense against Hitler before even entering the war itself. So we don't really know what would have happened if not for the war. Right? Based on what the story I've just explained, we can say, well, perhaps if not for the war, Roosevelt and his advisors would have gone on adopting Keynesian policies and would have spent enough on deficit to get the country out of the depression. We can also say that in actual fact, we didn't get to run that experiment. In actual fact, what happened was that Roosevelt and his advisors spent an awful lot of money to employ Americans directly on deficit for a giant public works program that was called World War II. Either way you look at it, though, the story is that enormous government spending and direct employment pulled the country out of the Depression. So you don't need the war, you just need the government spending.
Government stimulating the economy by spending public dollars.
Yeah, that's the usual lesson that people draw from this story.
Eric Grouchway is a historian at the University of California, Davis, and his book is The Great Depression and the New Deal. Eric, tell me what you think as a historian when you hear the politics of the day. It's become vogue among conservatives to demonize Roosevelt as the great evil socialist of American history of the 20th century and the man who brought us to the brink of communism. Is this accurate? Because we have to look at the Bush administration now and the money they're throwing at corporate America these days in context with that.
Yes. Well, I mean, if one were currently a Democrat in office and one were accused of being a socialist, one could always say, look at the last guy. You know, he nationalized the banks. I mean, what do you want? It seems ridiculous. If one were currently a Democrat and one were accused of fiscal irresponsibility, one could always say, look at the last guy. He ran enormous deficits to blow stuff up in Iraq. In the context of recent history, a lot of those ideas don't seem to make a great deal of sense. In the context of longer history, you know, this is a very interesting story. Roosevelt comes to office in March 33. He dies in April 45. Roosevelt's time in office is almost exactly contemporary with that of Adolf Hitler in Germany. If you want to understand whether Roosevelt was a socialist or Roosevelt was a communist, you have to only look at the way people around the world looked at Franklin Roosevelt at the time. At the time he came into office, you know, John Maynard Keynes, to pick up that name again, wrote him an open letter and said, you are the last hope of reasonable people in the world, the last hope that there can still be reform within the current system. If you fail, it will be a prejudice against reasonable men, you know, around the world. And what Keynes is thinking of course, is Hitler. Keynes is thinking of Stalin. Keynes is thinking of the threat to civilization that are posed by these extremes that are not theoretical, you know, not sort of political bugaboos, but are really going on in the world at the time. And the United States, miraculously, under Roosevelt, manages not to go to either of those extremes. I mean, whatever you can say about the New Deal, it isn't socialist. You know, the New Deal comes out, you get what economists generally call the mixed economy. The best programs, the lasting programs of the New Deal, are programs which use the power of the federal government to enable Americans to strike deals in the marketplace for themselves. So you get things like Social Security. That gives you the assurance that, you know, you aren't going to fall into utter poverty in old age, and you can plan your life accordingly. You have a deal of freedom there. You get things like unemployment insurance. That gives you the freedom to kind of negotiate, you know, with your employer without the fear that going out of work would mean immediate destitution. You get the idea that unions should be legal. That gives workers the idea to negotiate for themselves. That's not the government doing it. That's not socialism. That's the government making it possible for people to do it for themselves. And again, you only have to compare it to what's going on in the rest of the world at the time to see in kind of stark clarity that it's ridiculous to refer to the New Deal as being socialist or communist.
Historian Eric Grouchway is at the University of California, Davis. His book is The Great Depression and the New Deal. Eric, I got to ask you one quick question before we let you go. As you look now at this new administration that's taking shape and that will take office in January, what is it that, as a historian of the Great Depression and as somebody living through yet another very challenging economic time in American history, what is it you'd like to see them do and not do? In that first year in office,
I'd really, really like to see them move swiftly to meet the current crisis. I'd like to see them act to put fiscal stimulus in the hands of people who are most likely to spend the money right away, so you can have the maximum amount of consumer bang for your buck as a result of Keynesian stimulus. I'd like them to put that money into an infrastructure investment, and ideally, kill two or three birds with one stone, maybe green infrastructure investment, things like super trains and stuff like that, that will last us for a long time. And the legacy of the New Deal was not only a set of institutions that made it easier to weather economic downturns, it was bridges and highways and airports and seaports that lasted the better part of half a century for much of America, and some of which are still serving pretty well today. You hear endless things about our crumbling infrastructure. Now might be an excellent time to address that problem from the angle of also trying to avoid an economic downturn. I'd like them not to worry too much about fables about how, you know, the Roosevelt administration screwed up. I don't think those are things that they need to worry about doing. They have the advantage of the New Deal's safety net, which still exists to prevent them from making too many mistakes. They have the advantage of some of the New Deal's better institutions, like the FDIC and the Fed, backstopping them. And I think they should feel that they have the freedom to go ahead.
Eric Rauchway, the book is The Great Depression and the New Deal, a very short introduction. He's a historian at the University of California, Davis. Eric, thank you so much for making time for us. I really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.